The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to Episode 8 of The Catholics of Oz. Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello and welcome to Episode 8 of The Catholics of Oz. My name is Lindsay Sant, your host, and joining me today is Caroline. Caroline, how are you today?
Hey, bro. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Very good. Good that you're here. And Jerry, how are you?
Very well. Good to be here today.
Great. So in great podcasting tradition, we've actually got nice weather today. Do you remember, Jerry, we talked about in our previous episode how it was pretty bad weather and suddenly it's like a beautiful spring day.
We're missing the sunshine, weren't we?
Yeah, it feels like a spring day today, which is scary.
Well, it's coming. It's our autumn, fall in America, and they're approaching spring. It's been funny listening to some of the other podcasts on the STPN network because they've been talking about how the weather's finally clearing and getting better. And rising above zero, I think it's our approach. Yes, we're going to be the ones complaining about it.
Yeah.
Not being able to go outside, having to rug up with three or four layers, etc. Yeah.
We're below 20 degrees Celsius, we start complaining. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know it's a good day when it goes above zero. So why don't we get ourselves started by talking about Faith Beyond Borders.
Well, I'm actually feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh? Oh. Spiritually, ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, son. You come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology.
Quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
So Faith Beyond Borders is a segment where we talk about people who have stepped beyond the borders of the church and they've talked about faith content in the public square in some way or form. And every so often, guys, when we do this, we also talk about, times where people may not have gotten it right somehow. So let me reference a previous episode where we talked about the guy who found the $20 tip that ended up being nothing. Do you guys remember that?
Yes.
Yes. Well, this one's might be a little bit more serious. So I'll just set some context and then we can have a bit of a chat about this. So you've both heard of Israel Folau, I'm guessing, the famous Australian wallaby. He's not actually a wallaby. Wallaby is our international, I should mention our international rugby team. He's an elite sports player, in rugby and he's, won a lot of awards. He's, he gets paid millions and millions of dollars to play rugby, but he's also a Christian. And just during the week, he put this image on Instagram and, it had the following words on there. It said, "Warning. Drunks, homosexuals, adulterers, liars, fornicators, thieves, atheists, and idolaters. Hell awaits you. Repent. Only Jesus saves." And then following that post in the comments, he put a couple of Bible passages about, obviously, about people's sins and repenting of sin and so on. So I thought we'd talk about this because it caused a huge media storm. So lots of news reports online. I'm not sure if it made it to. Actually, I think it did make it to TV news anyway. At least to the ABC, our national broadcaster. Basically, I mean, they focused on online first of all. They called it a homophobic post. They picked on the homosexual part and left everything else out of there. And they basically, a lot of people have been calling for Israel Folau to be fired, from his rugby team, to have his contract, to have his contract ripped up. And my understanding is that that's actually happened. But I just wanted to talk today about not so much about the particular sins that he's, picked out and put there, but about the idea of whether this is good evangelization or not. So, Jared, can I maybe start off with you? What was your initial reaction when you heard about this post?
Well, first of all, it sounds a lot like the old fire and brimstone preaching, whereas, do as I'm telling you to do or you're finished, a barbecue for you. And I think that was, I suppose, a lot more successful probably 40, 50 years ago when you didn't have widespread coverage, internet media, etc. But these days, a lot of people are seeing that and just being turned straight off. It's not a gospel or a preaching of love. It's a preaching of command. Do as I tell you to do.
Yeah. And Caroline, what about you? What was your initial reaction when you heard about this?
I agree. I think as soon as you start telling someone you're going to hell, they're going to switch off. I mean, I don't think anybody is able to say to someone you're going to hell. I mean, you can't really judge. I don't think anybody's in the position to judge someone based on what they see or whatever, because we all have our sins, don't we? So it's not that we can pretend that we're better than anybody else. So I don't know why he thinks that he can tell somebody else that they're going to hell. I mean, I just think from a judgment point of view, he doesn't really have the right to judge. And also, I mean, him being in a position of, he's probably using his position of fame to spread this kind of message. I mean, I just think that it's probably not appropriate. If he thinks that kind of thing, perhaps he should go tell his friends or something, but I don't think he should be putting it on social media. I mean, for me, then there's the other issue of free speech. I mean, we have kind of a limited free speech here in this country. You can say things, but you can't say certain other things, and because look what happens to you.
Yeah. I'll go back to now. Australia had a same-sex marriage plebiscite, which was like it's a survey basically where the government surveys the people and the government was then going to act on the results of the survey. And during that time, Israel Folau spoke up and said, "I don't support same-sex marriage." And that was fine, the way that he spoke about that. And, he was criticized for that, but, people sort of looked at the critics and said, be quiet. He can speak the way that he wants to. This post for me is a little bit different to that situation though, because it's the judgmental part of it that I'm a bit worried about. And again, I don't want to criticize him as a person, but I certainly want to provide a bit of a critique of putting a post like this. So, I mean, the thing is, first of all, at the top, it's got warning in a bigger, more orange font than everything else. And at the bottom, again, in that same large orange font, it says, "Hell awaits you." So I guess, depending on who he was trying to reach, it's probably not a good way to reach out to others. So it was put on his Instagram, feed. And that clearly, is a very public feed. It's going to be for all kinds of people. And if we are going to evangelize, there are other ways to do it rather than to go with this. I'm thinking of some other great evangelizers who have influenced me. So I'm guessing the two of you are obviously familiar with Bishop Robert Barron. Yes, that'd be a quick yes from both of you.
Yeah, very
familiar. And his approach, and not everyone will agree with this, but there's a context for this with a lot of people, especially people who don't know anything about the church or who have assumptions about the church, whatever those assumptions might be. His thing is show people what's beautiful about Christ first, and then the morality will make more sense when you get to that point. So, I mean, if you want to introduce a person to a life of faith and to Jesus and all the faith content, you don't start off by saying if you drink, if you're homosexual, if you're an adulterer, a life fornicator, and the list goes on, then you're going to hell. That's not the best introduction to Jesus I've ever seen in my life, if that kind of makes sense. And I think even the post itself, in some ways, it's inaccurate. So, for example, if you look in the catechism, it talks about, homosexuals. And we're not talking about homosexuality as in who you're attracted to being a sin. Even the church doesn't agree with that. The church doesn't say that at all. But there are other things to do with that issue, where we can talk about sin and sinfulness and whatever else. But we talk about, acts outside of marriage, ... And then we can talk about the sinfulness and things like that. But it's not a starting point for a conversation when it comes to evangelization. The other issue I have is that not everyone who recognizes that they're in a state of sin then switches off and stops sinning straight away. Sometimes, and that depends on what it is, because, you know, again, I can't speak for everyone, but sometimes we transition out of things. So for example, if you're an atheist, right, and I'm not saying being an atheist is sinful, but if you're an atheist who is thinking about becoming Christian, you haven't fully become Christian yet. That process might take months or a year or even many years. And as some, you know, famous atheists who have become Catholic or Christian, it's taken them a while to do that. They didn't just one day switch on and go, yep, I'm going to wake up today and accept this whole Christianity thing. I mean, look at the life of Bill Hayden, who we talked about many episodes ago. You know, he didn't become a Catholic overnight. It took decades and decades of grappling with faith content. So do we say that he's hellbound, you know, a person who's trying to grapple with that journey? So my issue is that anyone, whether it's these things that he's listed on this post or anything else that we would say is less than a Christian life, if you have someone in your congregation, for example, it's got drunks here who has a drinking problem, who's desperately trying to get out of it, but falls back into that drinking problem. And if your way of saying you can stop drinking, otherwise you're going to hell, it's kind of exclusive, isn't it? It kind of makes people think, I'll never be a good Christian. Maybe the Christian thing isn't for me. I think whatever sins you put in that list, I think it kind of discourages people who are trying really hard to live a Christian life, but falling, as we all do fall, into this category of you'll never be good enough. You'll never be good enough for Jesus. Jared, does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, you went for a while there, but it kept the flow was great.
Sorry, a bit of a rant.
Well, it just flowed, didn't it? The whole thing makes sense when you put it like that. It's, you know, you're saying you're right now, you're no good. And then many people, I think, would say, well, stuff it. Who cares? Yeah. Is that what you think? Well, I'm not going to do it then. I can't do it, so I may as well enjoy what, you know, I'm getting something out of it now. I'm going to keep getting something out of it.
Yeah, just throw the whole thing in. Caroline, what about you? What I was talking about, does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I agree too. If somebody was said to me, oh, you better stop drinking or you're going to hell, I'd probably just go, oh, well, I'll just keep drinking. It's the same thing. I mean, I think a better way to maybe encourage someone to turn away from their sin is to pray for them and to support them through it and try and, you know, just be there for them. And, you know, then they have someone to turn to if they need some support in that. And, you know, if you can be a good example to someone who you are supporting through something, then perhaps there's a better chance of them, you know, giving up that particular sin or way of life and, you know, perhaps turning towards Christianity or Jesus or, you know, just getting back on track with things.
Going back to Bishop Robert Barron, he was talking in one of his videos that I watched a while ago. I'll never forget this. He talked about, again, about the church's, you know, morality, its discussion about morality and how the law of love or the law of God, it's actually a very high bar for us to try and live up to this, you know, because we're basically being asked to live up to perfection. And it's probably a bar that very few of us will actually reach in terms of living as a perfect Christian who's, you know, free of sin and things like that. He says, but between where we are and that high bar that we're working our way towards, towards God is mercy. And so it's God who lifts us into a better life. And it's our reliance on God that helps us to turn away from sin. So I tend to think, and again, it depends on context and what's happening in a person's life. But in terms of sinfulness, it's a journey, just like trying to know who God is. It's a journey. We can't threaten people out of sin. It doesn't work that way. The other side of this story, guys, as well, I just wanted to mention this. So Israel Folau was sacked, and I think he'd been warned in previous things that he'd said online. You know, this is the journey you're on, and you know, eventually, what will happen is your position will become untenable. I'm paraphrasing what I've read, and so he got sacked. I also think it's kind of sad that, you know, being such an elite sports person, that he got sacked when, you know, there are lots of other really good things that he does. This isn't all he does. There are some great things he does as well, and I kind of, without being the supreme judge and authority in all of this, but I feel like there's a failure on both sides, in the sense that there's a failure in the sense that he posted this and thought it was okay to post it as evangelical content. But there's also a failure that that he couldn't have some kind of pastoral discussion, you know, with his club and with all those people who employ him. and for them to find a way forward, you know, so that he can engage in evangelical activity, but at the same time, also not say things that are harmful and damaging to other people as well. So that's my two cents. Should I get off my soapbox now?
Yeah, I'll figure.
If you're comfortable.
All right, okay. Sorry, let me just climb down.
I think what it would finally come down to is that, is what he's posted there, does that uphold any dignity of anyone who's is suffering or is committing any of these items? And I would say no, it doesn't.
Mm.
There's no, the Catholic teaching is that every person, gay or straight or anything like that, should be treated with dignity. And so you mentioned, Lindsay, just before we got started on here about the judging, and I think it was the reading not too long ago at Mass was removing the log from your own eye before the splinter in your brother's eye.
Correct.
And that's probably a sign off for what this this issue has been about.
Yeah, there's all kinds. I mean, St. Paul talks about living with a thorn in his flesh, and he's asked God to remove it, and God says, "My grace is enough." You know, that there's all these. There's although Israel Flowers published a whole lot of Bible passages which talk about sin and the consequence of sin, that it's not the end of the story. It's not the totality of Christianity. You know, you're a sinner, therefore you're no good. It's actually you're a sinner, but God loves you, and there's a way forward. That to me is more about the totality of Christianity. I think there's a bit of a fundamentalist reading of scripture going on here, and I think that might be where it comes from. But anyway, speaking of scripture and reflection and things like that, why don't we move on to our next segment where we're going to share something personal.
I bet you don't know anything about me.
You were born in Phoenix. You went to school in Tempe. You're an only child. Your favorite show is something called The Real Housewives of Atlanta, and your favorite book is Kendall Jenner's Instagram feed.
How did you know all that?
So we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks about how this is going to work out, and this is the format we've decided on. The Something Personal segment is basically where we share reflections about our lives, things we've experienced, and things like that. So today, at the time of recording, today is Palm Sunday, and so Easter is 1 week away from us. So we're just about to, we're a week from that. I think from memory, this episode actually comes out a week after Easter. So what we'd like to do is share our Easter journey, our Lenten journey, and what we've picked up along the way, because every Lent in our life is different. And so we just wanted to talk about what our Lenten journey has been like. So Jared, how about I throw it over to you first? Do you want to tell us a little bit about what Lent has given you this year?
Sure thing. Okay, so in true Christian fashion, I'm going to offer up 3 points. And I might read a little, it's not going to read anything like a papal, a letter from Ash Wednesday that we've been fond of, a Lenten letter,
yep.
Which usually has 3 steps, but my 3 steps are going to be fall well short of that. but we're going to follow on that tradition. So what has this Lent given me? First thing I've come to the realization is, and here's the big reveal, I am a sinner.
Wow.
Ooh.
Oh.
No.
What a reveal. So when I sat down and I tried to come up with some ideas for what I'm going to give up this year, because for me, that's how Lent sort of can work for me, is that I look at what I've got, what I'm taking, where I'm taking excesses, where I'm causing harm, and this is what I came up with. Giving up the chocolate. It's got a real retro feel to it. That's one of the first things I did when I did this giving up for Lent stuff, was giving up chocolate, and it was like a novelty. Classic. Now I'm giving up chocolate because it's bordering on, how would you say it, addiction. I see a chocolate box. I'll take one biscuit, and then I'll have another, and maybe another, and then I'll have a cup of tea with another, and hang on, we better put this away, and then by then I've had however many. So no chocolate was the first one. Second one was getting off the PC by midnight, and I'll go into more detail on that one later. And the third one I was aiming for was starting the morning with some exercise, because, roll out of bed, breakfast, go to work, and that's how the morning would start. I figured I can improve that. So how have I gone? Not quite 3 strikes, but a lot poorer than I would have thought and I would have liked.
Sure.
So let's start with the review. So the chocolate, I've never realized how much I'm just used to consuming it. So for example, the kids having a lunch, they might have some Nutella sandwiches. Guess who licks the knife? Guess who's done it plenty of times in Lent? Oh, hang on. What am I supposed to do now? Spit it out?
I can't let it go to waste.
No.
And that was one of my excuses. Hot chocolate hot cross buns. No one else wants them. What am I supposed to do with them?
Can't waste it.
Might as well eat it.
Yeah. Well, and then just going into things like, you know, chocolate within the muesli bars at morning tea time, bit of powder in the warm milk before bed. I didn't realize how often I was eating chocolate, even though I thought I was eating it too much. I didn't realize how much I was eating it. And so I suppose in the first 3 weeks of Lent, I was still going. To be fair, quite a few times without even thinking, you know, let's just say the knife was clean. The chocolate powder was in the milk already. And I drank half of it. Oh, crap. So off the PC by midnight. So I suppose a bit of background to that is that pre-children, so I've got a 6 and a 3-year-old. Pre-children, I could, you know, do a little gaming in the evenings and say 9 or 10 o'clock, I'm done. And I can, you know, go along with the next stage of bedtime routine, which is, you know, shower, teeth clean, whatever else in bed. And still have had a decent amount of gaming time. And now with kids, 9 or 10 o'clock is about when I can turn on the PC and get started if I wanted to do something. And that's, you know, without any washing to hang out or dishes to wash or anything. I've said, oh, I'll do this, and then shirked it until the kids have gone to bed. And I suppose I found this one a bit harder to control, and I suppose a bit hard to want to control, because I'm a gamer. It's always been my thing. Some people have TV and binge watching. I'll binge play a game. I think I'm getting better. I'm getting a bit more of a handle on it. And now, okay, how do I know this? Because my wife, Priscilla, will say, why are you here already? When I show up, like I'm here too early. So I think I'm getting a handle on that one. Okay, and the third one, morning exercise. Let's not even go there. That's a definite strike. I've done one day. But
better than nothing, Jerry.
Yes, it's something.
That's 100% improvement. I mean, it's done one.
So that's the first step. The second step was the realization that Lent is a journey. It's not a switch I can flick, and all of a sudden, all those things I mentioned before, all of a sudden I'm giving them up. But here's the problem for me, was that my memories of Lent, you know, previously, I'd, you know, watch the clock for 40 days, have no issues or problems giving up whatever I decide to give up. Aside from the, you know, occasionally I test the boundaries, you know, there's a certain favorite food takeaway that I might have, which, you know, is chicken with a special type of sauce. And I might say, well, hey, if I can't have the special type of chicken from the shop, how about I just taste the sauce? And that was, you know, pushing the boundaries. That didn't end well. But yeah, that's how you learn things. But what this Lent has been, it's been a number of slip-ups. And I think this one has made me a bit more aware of how, of, you know, like I said above, about being a sinner. But a little bit more aware that it's not just something that happens overnight. And maybe this time, and I don't know about all the other Lents I've had, maybe this Lent I've actually picked some decent things to try and give up because I haven't been able to. And so that leads on to my third point, is that the call to be a better person, whether it's through what you're giving up or just in your everyday daily life, doesn't end at Easter. So like I said, 40 days of clock watching, and guess what? Say if I give up chocolate. No, chocolate's a bad one because that does – Easter is just, you know, impossible to not have chocolate on Easter. But say, let's just say I give up you know, fast food. Guess what my first meal is going to be at the end of Lent? I'm going to break a fast with a feast. I'll probably go and have fast food if I'd given that up during Lent. But what this journey is telling me is that the journey doesn't stop at Easter. And we probably all knew this, but what I'm thinking, I'm getting a lesson in it this year. So hopefully, because it's not Lent, it's not Easter yet, so I can't give a full review and say this is what it's going to be like, but hopefully after this Holy Week and after Easter, that where I've got listed as my things to give up as chocolate, getting off the PC a little earlier or by midnight, and starting with exercise, I'm hoping that I can, that, you know, Easter Monday morning, maybe I can get up and run around the block, spend a day doing whatever because it's a public holiday, put the kids to bed, play some PC games, and then turn it off before midnight without having a chocolate nightcap.
A chocolate nightcap, I like that. I'm all in favor of the chocolate nightcap.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
So that's I suppose my three steps. So that's where I'm aiming to get by the end. I can't, you know, as we were recording a week before the before Easter, I can't say that's what's going to happen. That's what I'm hoping will happen, is that what I've been trying to give up and not having a real decent successful outcome in it, maybe, and hopefully because I'm not being all that successful, maybe I'll keep going at it after Easter. That's what I'm hoping and aiming for. There we go.
That's great, Jerry. I think the wisdom in that is that that, you know, failing some of your goals has actually been more enlightening than if you actually were simply able to achieve them with no issue. It feels like, isn't it how, you know, how God works in strange ways that we make certain plans, but then God shows us the lesson in those plans as well. And I think that's fantastic. So I might, sorry, Caroline, yep.
Okay, so for this Lent, I gave up chocolate. No, Ooh. Well, actually,
chocolate
I started
giver upper
off.
Siblings.
Yes. Actually, I started with trying to as one of my, you know, Lenten things because I find that very difficult as well, Jerry. However, I soon found myself getting back right into the chocolate because as a way of eating up some emotions. Unfortunately, just before Lent started, Lindsay, your my mother, was diagnosed with a second round of cancer. Yeah, before I got it in 2016, she got breast cancer. We just had a bad run like that, unfortunately. Yeah, so she's had a second diagnosis. It's come back. Yeah, so she's had to have surgery and then start chemotherapy. So Mum kind of hinted at maybe, you know, can she come and stay with me while she was recovering from surgery? I said, yeah, of course, you know. So we set up the bedroom there and she stayed with us. And then it came back to us from the doctors, look, you're going to have to, you know, Mum's going to have to go through 6 months of chemotherapy. And we thought, oh, okay, you know, this is going to be a journey. So so I said to Mum, you know, why don't you just stay on? Because we had no idea how chemotherapy was going to affect her. And she had no idea. And, you know, first time having to encounter it, you know, it's pretty scary. So, you know, so she's been staying with me during that. And, you know, I've just been looking after her, you know, taking on another person, which I absolutely am fine with. I love my mom. I'll do anything for her and I'm happy to see her relaxed and happy here. But, you know, my journey hasn't, you know, through Lent hasn't been about food or giving up something. It's turned out completely opposite and it's been about me giving everything, you know. It's been about me giving more of myself and, you know, just self-sacrificing my time, my energy, you know, in addition to being a mum to two young boys who, you know, I obviously have to have mother duties too, and you already are kind of self-sacrificing for them. You know, I also have my mother to look after, which, you know, it's hard work. I mean, I actually really am finding some joy in being able to help her through this, you know, and seeing how, you know, she's able to trust in me, you know, to be able to look after her in all the ways that she needs. And I just feel like, you know, I feel like I'm reflecting a lot on the Last Supper. You know, we read in the Bible when Jesus told the apostles, you know, like, I really want to share this Passover meal with you and I want to give you myself. Here's my body. Here's my blood. I'm giving you everything of myself and I'm going to die for you and I'm going to die for everyone. And, you know, I just really felt like I could connect with Jesus on that level, and it's been such a help for me to be able to relate in that way, you know. And so, I mean, I don't really have too much more to say about that, except that, yeah, I'm just really learning more about self-sacrificing and not worrying too much about food, giving up food, because I've actually had to indulge a bit to be able to cope, you know. And so I just threw that giving up chocolate business out the window this year and just giving more of myself, you know, in any way that's needed, you know. And I have had your support, Lindsay, which I've been really grateful for, and I've had our other siblings, you know, Paul and Lindsay, and you know, and I'm finding that we probably are getting closer. I mean, we're already very close, the four of us, but I think we're more close because of it. And yeah, just learning that, you know, what's important, what's really important in life. And you know, there is a joy and there is a peace about giving yourself to others, and yeah, and being able to do that. And yeah, and yeah, I've just had a really nice spiritual experience through this Lent. And yeah, it's going to continue for the rest of the year. It's not going to end at Easter for sure. But at least I'm learning how to give myself and to cope and manage and just take on what is needed to be done. So yeah.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, and that's you know, obviously, you know, outside of this podcast, when you know, when we talk about mum, you know, we're all part of that journey. And it's and I think it's good that mum has, you know, you primarily, but the four of us to pitch in and help out. You know, we're all looking at ways that we can help out with appointments and things like that. So but yeah, I think you know you've taken the primary role of this, and you are doing a lot of self-sacrifice, and it's I'm glad, at least, you know, as challenging as it can be, that you've found God in that, and you've, you know, the way you related it to the gospel and the Last Supper was quite beautiful too.
Thank you. Yeah.
I think as well, I mean, our whole congregation, our church, has always been praying for your mum as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've got a little bit of a bone to pick with someone somewhere about it, is that, you know, a lot of people would have heard that she was sick because her name was in the bulletin and, you know, read out in the prayers of the faithful.
Mm-hmm.
And my suspicion is that she heard that and she asked for herself to be taken back out, because she's not the kind of woman, your mum, to want that.
No. And in fact, when I had it, I told them don't put it in. I didn't want to be broadcast over the church microphone either.
Yeah, but I would ask anyone who's listening today, this is maybe a minute or two when you're doing your evening prayers or whatever, maybe just send a prayer, you know, to Caroline and Lindsay's mum's way. You know, join us who are praying for her to recover and to recover well from this.
Thank you, Jerry. Yeah,
thanks, Jerry. Yeah, thank you. And we'd appreciate anyone's prayers for mum. If you want to mention her by name, her name is Carmen. We'd love for you to do that.
And one final thing, Caroline, if I knew that you were giving up chocolate and then subsequently not giving up chocolate. To compound my no chocolate issues, my daughter Caitlin, who goes to school, is in grade one, right, won an Easter hamper at school, and inside that was about 2 or 3 kilograms of chocolate.
Oh, my goodness.
That's sitting on the middle of the dining room table. We're slowly chipping away at it, a lot slower than normal because I'm not partaking. I would have loved to put some of that somewhere, and your house would have suited me fine.
Well, it's not too late, Jerry. Please, anytime you want to drive some of that over, you're quite welcome.
Yes, in the Christian life, it's never too late, guys.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll just throw my little reflection in as well. So mine is, I guess, the two of you have spoken about, from my interpretation, my unpacking of what you've both said, it's about realizations. I think you've both realized something, and I think Lent is really powerful with that. I've had a pretty challenging last couple of weeks of term at work. It's probably been more mentally taxing because I'm a high school teacher. It's been more mentally taxing on me than I think it ever has before. I think this term was probably the most challenging in my entire career. From a work perspective, let alone all the things, you know, Caroline, like you were just talking about, that happen outside of work. But basically, for the last, you know, 5 or 6 weeks before the school holidays started, the Easter break, I was part of a team of 4 teachers who were preparing our school's Stations of the Cross. And the Stations of the Cross, we run it 3 times because we actually have 3 campuses, so 3 separate locations. So you know, we'll do it at our senior campus, and there's 2 junior campuses, which are both year 7 to 9 campuses. And we knew it was going to be a big day. And we continually prepared and prepared and prepared for it. And regardless of our preparations, it always felt like we were going nowhere fast, just because of, you know, complications that would pop up and whatever else. So part of the Stations of the Cross is for the religious education coordinators. So there's three at my school, one for each campus, and I'm the one for the senior campus. They ask us to give a, you know, like a reflection at the end of the Stations of the Cross once it's been finished. So I wanted to share something about the reflection that I gave to our students. So we're in a hall of 1,500 students. So, you know, they're all 15 to 18 years old, around that age bracket. I didn't want to just preach about Jesus to them, because that's kind of how you switch people off. So I wanted to start from somewhere personal. So this is kind of what I said, that there was the weekends before, so the Saturday before that day we had the Station of the Cross, my 10-year-old son Damien and I, we actually had a bit of an argument. So it's not a proud dad moment for me, because I could have handled it a lot better. But you know, it got out of hand, in the sense that both of us are being unreasonable, you know. But I'm the adult in the room, so I probably should have been more reasonable in the way I dealt with it. And so Damien got upset and he stormed down the passageway, you know, at our home and to his bedroom. And I said, "Don't go to your bedroom, come back here." And he kept going. And I said, "If you go, there's going to be consequences." But he was so upset that he went to his room and closed the door. And you know, here I was, self-righteous, you know, grumpy dad, thinking about what the appropriate consequence for Damien's, you know, disobedience was going to be. And I told the students I was a little bit ashamed of myself about that moment. And in all of that reflection, it reminded me about other things that I had also been thinking about during Lent. And there were two things about Lent that I had been thinking of. The first one was that Jesus was an innocent person who was killed for doing the right thing, for being a religiously observant Jew who followed the law of love and the law of God properly. And he was killed by people who should have recognized him, who, you know, the religious leaders of his time. He was executed by them because there was God in their midst and they couldn't recognize God because they had made it all about themselves. So, for example, there were religious laws that they forced or pushed everyone to adhere to, a bit like what we talked about in our first segment. You know, if you don't do this, you don't do this, you don't do this, you're no good, you're not a good Jew or whatever else. And made the practice of Judaism something else. You know, you have to observe this, you have to observe that. And I think, for example, of things like Jesus saying, man wasn't made for the Sabbath was made for man. So he flips those two things around. So what I'm getting at is that Jesus was killed for following God's law of love and not following the man-made laws that had been made in addition to God's law. So we've got all these things that God is about, and Jesus demonstrated those. For example, he associated with people who were on the fringes of his society, of the outcasts. So, for example, think of the woman who had the bleed. You know, she was ritually unclean because she was bleeding for 8 years of her life, so she couldn't be an observant Jew. She was an outcast, essentially. And so when Jesus heals her, when she touches his robe, you know, that's kind of a no-no. He shouldn't have associated with her. And then when we hear about him eating with tax collectors and other sinners and prostitutes, the ones that are named, all of these people, or when he talks to a Samaritan woman, which, you know, the woman at the well, which he shouldn't have done according to the Jewish laws, or when he forgives the sins of the woman who should have been stoned to death for adultery and all that. So all of these things were, he contradicted all of these laws that had been put as oppressive rods on the backs of, you know, of everyday practicing Jews. And he was killed for that, for doing the right thing. And the second observation I thought about was that when he was put on the cross, even at that point when he's hanging naked and vulnerable, some of the words, they talk about the seven phrases that Jesus uses when he dies, when he's dying on the cross. And one of them he says is, "Father, forgive them," which is quite powerful when you think about it. He offered forgiveness. He asked God the Father as he was dying, as he was put on the cross by the very people who humiliated him and who still didn't like him, even, and, you know, jeered at him while he was on the cross, and he asked for God to forgive them. And I find that quite a powerful thing. And this is what I've been reflecting on a lot during Lent, and the power of forgiveness and the importance of it. So I said to the students there, I said, 3 days later, Jesus comes back from the dead after his apostles thought this was it. The project is over. We failed. It's all gone now. But then he proves that he's the real deal when he comes back and appears to them. And suddenly from there, you have a community of hundreds who are going out to the fringes of society now and following God's law of love. And that community develops into thousands as the years goes on. And it develops into hundreds of thousands of millions. And here we are now in 2019. And our mission is to go out to the fringes and to help people who are on the fringes of our society, who are overtaken by sin and all that, to show God's mercy and love to them. And I was saying to my students, again, 1,500 people in the room, I said to all of them, I bet there are people in the room today who need you right now, who need you to be the gospel for them. And this is what the Easter call is for you. And then I went back to the story of Damien with them and I said, Jesus' death was not the end of the story, as you could see. The story continued and we have this community of love. We call it the Catholic Church. And so I said, with me and Damien, the story is not over either. Damien, when we had that fight on that Saturday, Damien eventually came out of his room and I said, son, come here, we need to talk. And I got him to sit on the couch with me and his face was, I'm in trouble, I'm going to get it. And I said, son, and it was, I had to, after I'd cooled down and reasonable brain kicked back in again, I said, son, the consequence of your actions is my forgiveness. And when I said that, the students in the room, when I told them that story, I could hear people around me going, whoa, as I, reached out to them. And I told them about Damien's reaction. I said, Damien looked at me and his face was like, what the heck? And they all started laughing, I just wanted to share with them that powerful message of forgiveness that innocent people do suffer for, doing the right thing, for following the laws of God's love. But we are more powerful when we're able to forgive. That's the power that we have, is this power of forgiveness. And forgiveness doesn't come easily. It's a brave choice, I think. And I'm not saying I made a brave choice, but I think it's a brave choice because Jesus showed us it was a brave choice to make as well. So I think to sum it up, my reflection for Lent has been, this idea of innocence, but also the power of forgiveness. And I think I've really clicked onto what Jesus was on about in terms of forgiveness, especially for this Lent. So there it is, guys. You think it's time to move on?
That's good. But I have one question, Lindsay.
Yeah, I've got you go first, Caroline. Sorry,
Jerry. Okay, thank you. I just want to know one thing about all of this. Did you give up chocolate?
Should I tell? I actually did give up chocolate. I gave it up and I've done all right. But the thing is, I mean, for you guys, it's a really big thing. For me, I've given up chocolate, but I don't really miss it. So it's not really a big, big deal for me to give it up, if that makes sense. I'd love some right now. Don't get me wrong. I'd love to come over to Jerry's place and get into that basket that he's got there. But I'd been looking for other things to do, I think. Here's a fun fact. I gave up coffee. it hasn't been. And I did listen very carefully to Father Corey's Let's Talk. And there was one of the warnings he gave. He said, if you give something up, if it's coffee or something, if you become a jerk, ungive it up. Start again, get back into it again.
Yes, I remember hearing that. That was very good advice.
Yeah, it is good advice. Yeah. So why don't we move on? And it's time for us to talk about science.
Ah, what a fine day for science.
You have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Can you reverse the polarity?
I'll do my best.
So, Caroline, big developments this week in the world of science, especially in the world of space science, which is your bread and butter. Tell us about this black hole image that we've been able to see this week.
Yeah, so it's quite a big, huge, supermassive. No, yeah, it's
well done, well played.
it's a very, very, very exciting development. We have managed to get the first image of a black hole, which, you know, black holes have been a mystery to scientists for such a long time and still are a mystery. We're still learning so much about them. But finally, a few days ago, we've been able to come up with the first image of a black hole. And this black hole is in the center of the Messier or M87 galaxy. And this galaxy is about 55 million light years away. So it's not really close. The black hole itself is so big that we could fit our entire solar system into it. So I don't know, it's kind of, the mind boggles, you know, when you start to think of, you know, that kind of size. The other thing is that it took a team of several telescopes to find this, to be able to image this black hole. They're calling it the Event Horizon Telescope, but it's not actually one telescope on its own. It's several telescopes around the world, and they're all being positioned into looking in the same direction and getting all the information. And they've been working on it for a while. And yeah, so we've managed to image it. And there's been a lady, yes, it's a lady who came up with, well, she actually led a team of people who came up with the algorithm to be able to translate the data coming from the telescopes into the image. And her name is Katie Bauman. So, yeah, it's been really exciting to see this amazing donut-like image. I mean, donuts are great on their own anyway, but you know, a massive, massive ring of like light, like an orb. It looks very much like, you know, the Eye of Sauron.
Yes, someone called it Space Sauron. Yeah.
Space Sauron. You can kind of, without the eyeball, obviously. But yeah, it's just amazing because I was actually watching a YouTube video the night before that someone had recommended to me, and it was a theoretical image they'd come up with. You know, because the light, the particles kind of spin around the edge of the event horizon around the black hole, because we can't actually see a black hole itself because it's dark and the gravity is so large that the particles of light get sucked right in, you know, and it's not actually a hole. It's a really extremely dense something, you know, it's really dense, so dense that, yeah, everything gets kind of drawn into it. And, yeah, so it's they've managed to kind of confirm the theoretical physics with this image, which it's just so amazing that they were able to be so accurate. The way the guy that was explaining it, you know, that the light particles, they kind of zoom by, and you know the actual light are like 2.6 radii away and all of that kind of jargon. But it's just so amazing that in the center, even of our galaxy, or every galaxy of this type, we have a black hole in the middle of it. So yeah, and don't worry, we are not anywhere near our black hole, so we're quite safe.
I thought it was amazing that Event Horizon project, that with those number of telescopes that had aimed at it, someone said it's the equivalent of having an Earth-sized telescope. Yes. Which blows my mind, let alone the size of this black hole.
Yeah. Well, they had been trying to kind of come up with a telescope that would be able to help them image a black hole, but, you know, they managed to cut the time off being able to do that by just, aiming I think it was about 8 telescopes around the world and just use them together to create this one big telescope, which is just amazing that you could even do that in the first place. So amazing.
And I want to advise anyone who wants to look at these images, there isn't just one image. So the most popular image is clearly the zoom up, you know, the big, yes, you know, donut ring of fire with the black hole in the middle, but there are actually images that are further away as well, so you get context. Yes. And you know, you can see like this little dot amongst all these, you know, swirling gases. So it's worth looking at all of the images and not just the popular image that's been on the news, because it's quite fascinating to look at.
Yeah. If you go to the NASA website, nasa.gov, it'll be on their front page. They are showing images that they use the Chandra X-ray telescope, and that shows you some really good X-ray images that they've taken. And yeah, one of them, they've got the big swirly orangey gas, and then they've got a square over it to show you where the black hole is in the middle of that. So yeah, it's just, it shows you, yeah, it gives you context of where this black hole is and kind of shows you all the particles that are around it. And it's just amazing. There's just so much science, and this is just the beginning. Obviously we're going to get more information as time goes on, but I think they couldn't wait to get this image out to us so that everybody in the world could see first image ever of a black hole.
Yeah, it's amazing. And as a footnote to that, we were looking at an article from American Magazine online, and they had Brother Guy Consolmagno, I hope I said that correctly, who's a bit of a favorite of ours. We've talked about him a couple of times, and he wrote this short article called "Can You Find God in a Black Hole?" And he said the following. So he was sort of theologizing the black hole, which is pretty amazing. But he said, "Can you find God in a black hole? Thanks to the image released by the Event Horizon Telescope Consortium on Wednesday, April the 10th, for the first time we have direct proof that a black hole is more than a theoretical construct. It is a thing." So it's a physical thing that exists. "So St. Ignatius was right to inspire us to find God in all things. The black hole certainly qualifies." And so he goes on to talk about, he used a spiritual analogy of something that we've always thought exists, but now we have proof that it does exist. But it's also something that we can't actually see, but it is real. So like you were saying before, you can't actually see a black hole. You can only work out where it is because of the event horizon. Is that right, Caroline? Am I good so
far?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so he talks about that kind of as an analogy of God, in the sense that, it's not about whether we can see God or not, but it's that we know God exists because there are ways that we can reason and work out that he does. And then he goes on to talk about what black holes are, and, you know, there are still things to work out, like you were just saying, Caroline. Like, you know, for example, he was saying, you know, is a black hole flattened, or does it have a bulge, you know, at its equator? You know, he said these things we don't know yet. And can we measure the bulge when we work out if it has one or not? But he concludes by saying, "All of that is for the future. For now, it's enough to marvel at the stark shadow in the ring of fire imaged by the Event Horizon Telescope. Black holes are real, exotic, strange, unexpected, well out of our mundane experience, and yet as real as the dirt under our feet and fundamental to how our own galaxy and our solar system was made possible. Yeah, I think you can find God there." And I thought it was interesting that you could take, you could put God instead of black holes, and you could say God is real, exotic, strange, unexpected, well outside of our mundane experience, and yet as real as the dirt under our feet and fundamental to how our own galaxy was made possible. I just feel, you know, I thought it was quite, quite interesting and quite intelligent, in the way that he kind of tied those two things together about how we find God in all things. Yeah. Jerry, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, it's a clever way of bringing it into it the way he does. I did have a look up at what did he say, 55 million light years, because that doesn't really mean anything to, you know, drivers or anything like that. And it turns out that one light year, I think you've got this right, one light year is 9.5 trillion kilometers away, or 6 trillion miles. That's one light year. And this thing is 55 million of those away.
So if you were traveling at the speed of light, it would take you 55 million years to get there.
I ain't got that much time.
Let's just say, a lot of zeros. This thing is so far away. So to be able to capture an image, even as slightly blurry it is, it's beyond incredible.
Amazing.
That.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering now, because in Melbourne, we have something called Science Works, where it's basically, you know, on the cutting edge sort of thing. And one of the things they have there is probably a half hour TV or, you know, a movie, this sort of thing, talking about black holes. And we've seen the video twice. Once we went there about four or five years ago, And then again last year, it turned out to be the same thing. 4 or 5 years ago, Caitlin fell asleep while we were watching it. but this year, no one fell asleep. But it talked about the theory of black holes, used a lot of cartoony images and talked about the bending of time, space, and how things sped up and slowed down. I'm curious, now that we've started to get images and progress is being made, I'm wondering if this is going to start changing. Because as I said, it hadn't changed for 4 years. From when we first went to we went last year, because I remember seeing some of the things they said were exactly the same. Although I remember they said this. It was still an interesting watch. They get me wrong, but I'm wondering if they're going to be able to start updating it with, you know, finding out all these new things. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of science. We really don't know everything. We are always discovering new things and always updating the textbooks and, you know, an updating the videos at ScienceWorks. So, yeah, that's kind of the fun part about it.
And on that mysterious note, we might round out the show just by finishing with a couple of little things that we wanted to talk about. So we kind of – this is like sweeping the floor and just getting the last little bits and pieces or some unfinished business. So, Jared, I think you had a bit of unfinished business that you wanted to talk about first of all. And this was in relation to an episode of The Secrets of TV and Movies, and it was this brilliant episode about John Williams' music. And so, Jared, why don't you take it away?
All right, so that was episode 36. Now, I reckon this is going to be one of my favorite episodes because the whole thing was pretty much a huge nostalgia trip, just hearing the themes and then the podcasters just recalling all the movies. But and that's basically what it was. Basically, most of John Williams' movies, where he won awards for, where he should have won awards for. But there was one moment, I think it was about 29 minutes in, and it wasn't a movie. I think Dom had just picked this one out. Maybe it was in chronological order, or maybe it was, you know, just to break up the show a bit. But it stood out for several reasons. But the main one that stood out was because it took me right back to my parents' living room at 6 p.m. on a school night. Because it was our Channel 7 nightly news was exactly the same as the NBC nightly news. And so when he played it, I'm like, I know that song. I don't watch NBC, but I know this song. And, I was just amazed to hear that this is going back into probably the late 80s, I think it would have been around then, or maybe early 90s. And it was such a throwback to hear that noise again. You know, all of a sudden I was sitting there in the lounge room doing, I don't know, playing Marble Maze or crashing my cars at, mid-primary school. And then... and also I remember about that song was meant that all the game shows had finished, you know, Wheel of Fortune was done, Family Feud was done.
Oh, those were good
now
days.
Time for the boring news. But I liked the song of it back then. And then hearing it again after all those years, well, it took me a long way back. So, yeah, episode 36, 29 minutes in. If you're in Australia and used to watch 7 nightly news, you'll hear that again. You'll be like, wow, I remember that tune.
Yeah, and I can't believe it was John Williams, the guy who wrote the Star Wars theme, the Superman theme, Jaws, Indiana Jones, all these, like, you know, epic, iconic themes that you could, you know, that you could just get into a group of, you know, people and sing together because everyone knows the tune, you know. And here it is. He's done the one that ended up on NBC, but also on our Channel 7 news. There must be affiliates or something there. The only thing that was unfamiliar to me as I listened to that episode, though, was that a male voice started talking and I was waiting for Jennifer Kite.
Yes.
There you go. Anyway, that's just from one of the shows on the SQPN network, Secrets of TV and Movies. And actually, we're going to be doing one of those at some point in the near future once we get our act together. Also, we wanted to mention that we have a Facebook page for the Catholics of Oz now. So you can just search for Catholics of Oz on Facebook. And you'll find our Facebook page there if you'd like to have more direct discussion about some of the things that we talk about in our episodes. And we'd also like to share other things apart from our episodes as well. So, you know, we had Palm Sunday today, so I've got some photos. I'll put those up there. And we'd like to just share little bits and pieces there. So the other thing is we are also now thanking patrons, which I find really exciting. So for the first time, I'd like to take a moment to thank some of the patrons of the SQPN network who make it possible for us to create Catholics of Oz. So today, we'd like to thank Familia Napuri, Trevor W., Jason H., Tim D., and Father Brian. Through their generous donations at sqpn.com/give, They make it possible for us to continue the Catholics of Oz and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. The Catholics of Oz is just one show amongst many on the SQPN network. There are other great ones. I've just mentioned the Secrets of TV and Movies. There's the Secrets of Star Trek, which I love. There's like one episode of Star Trek to go, and I can't wait. Star Trek Discovery, and I can't wait to see how it finishes. There's the Secrets of Doctor Who. There's Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. There's Let's Talk. I'm sure I've forgotten some, but if you go to
technology,
thank you very much. There it is. Yep. But if you go to sqpn.com, you'll find all the great shows that are there. So, thank you very much for listening today. Remember to like and share Catholics of Oz from the SQPN Facebook page. You can also retweet our episodes from Twitter, and you can leave comments and about your thoughts about our shows. Thank you, by the way, for the likes and shares that we have received so far. I've seen that we've had a few more. So thank you to all of you who are doing that. You can also subscribe to our show on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast app. We're also on YouTube, so you can find us on YouTube. Just hit the bell to get notifications when a new episode comes out. And also don't forget to leave feedback if you can on your podcast directories. So 5 stars and a bit of a review about why people should listen to us. It helps others to join our community and helps us to reach more listeners as well. So thanks very much for joining us for episode 8 of The Catholics of Oz. Don't forget our new Facebook page at facebook.com/Catholics of Oz. You can also email us at catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Caroline, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. It's been fun.
And Jerry, thanks to you as well.
Yep, glad to have been here. Did well today, I think.
And once again, I'm Lindsay Sant. Thank you very much for listening to The Catholics of Oz.